Hello and welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast, where it is Stat Nerd Thursday. That means if you haven't guessed it by now, I'm Matt Harmon, and I'm joined, like I am each week, by Dalton Del Don. We have plenty of good stats and some news to dig into this week, but before we get into all the fun, first, we have some pre-show business to take care of. By now, you've probably heard us talk about how Fantasy Plus can help your overall fantasy football team and your life in general. I can't guarantee that second statement, but I'm just going to say it anyways. If you haven't tried it out now, it's because you're worried about money. Well, in case this wasn't clear enough the last time I told you about it, you can try our Fantasy Plus for free for 7 days by visiting yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. There's literally no reason to not try it. It can't hurt. It can only help, period. Boom. And once again, it's for free. For 7 days. With that over and done with, Dalton, how's it going, man?
It's going well. A little anxious over here. SF Giants, Dodgers, game 5 coming up. But I know, of course, we're here to talk football. What's up, Harmon?
Oh, man, things are good. You know, I think we're in that period of the season where we have accepted a lot of new realities about teams and players that we might not have expected going into the season. And I like this time of year, man, because I think we can really dive into some things. And, you know, I know we have a news item here about Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter when he's healthy. But since the 49ers are on bye, Dalton, I think you and I can both preserve our mental well-being by not talking about the 49ers very much this episode. So that has me excited.
Can we? I have a ton of notes to go over, so that's too bad. No, seriously, I don't know. The Niners are. I don't know what. And they have the sprained knee to throw in there too for Lance. But yeah, so is that what we're just gonna say is Jimmy G, and then we're gonna forget? Or do you want to talk about Lance's first performance?
Let's talk about it next week. Okay. Let's give ourselves 1 week of peace, and we can revisit.
Let's revisit this next week.
All right. Well, other news items here. We can blow through these kind of quickly, but Lions center Frank Ragnow is out for the season. It's one of the few bright spots for the Detroit Lions overall. Their offensive line was kind of like supposed to be their team's strength. Penei Sewell has been pretty good as the left tackle. That's kind of worked out for them overall. But I mean, this is obviously a shallow offense where we have not gotten a consistent wide receiver emerging. I will say, Lions rookie receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, a fourth round pick, has kind of steadied in terms of his playing time, running plenty of routes the last couple of weeks, actually playing a little bit outside as well. So maybe offensive line injuries, Jared Goff getting the ball out even quicker. I don't think Goff has been awful this year or anything. I mean, he's a product of his environment, and his environment kind of sucks right now. But Amon-Ra St. Brown, definitely somebody to keep your eye on. Quintez Cephas was a receiver there that got hurt, who was kind of emerging.
Yeah, Goff hasn't been awful, and his stats would be even better if not for that one game where he dealt with all the rain. He still has not won an NFL game, as I just told you backstage, without Sean McVay, but he's played just fine. Look at the receivers he's dealt with. I mean, this is probably the worst in the league. He's been totally competent. But I want to talk about my guy DeAndre Swift, on pace for 1,500-plus scrimmage yards, 99 catches, and 10 touchdowns. Been playing through a groin injury against a tough schedule. Yet to even see 15 carries in a game. He trucked that guy, ran over that linebacker last week. He's my RB7 this week, even with the injuries along Detroit's offensive line, man. I remain in on Swift. Talk me down.
No, I'm in on Swift. I think he's definitely a top 15 back the rest of the way. That's for sure. Whether it's just by the attrition of the position, everything like that. I mean, it's just he's never going to have. He's like Austin Eckler. Light old Austin Eckler light, like how Austin Eckler's like getting the goal line carries and he's like a first and second down efficient first and second down runner so far this year. I think basically Swift is that player just in a worse situation, and I was drafting a lot of Austin Eckler, and you're not nearly that invested in Swift as you were in Eckler. So no, I have no problem with DeAndre Swift. I don't need to talk you down on that, buddy.
Okay, all right, cool. All right, well, now of course he's still battling this groin injury, but man, you gotta like what you've seen so far.
I think in Dynasty, especially, because we would expect.
Oh, yeah.
It is difficult with the Lions, because we were talking about this with our producer before we started, that, you know, the college football scene right now in terms of the quarterback class that's going to be coming in here. Like, listen, the Lions might be riding with Jared Goff again. They already kind of committed to him from a contract standpoint by restructuring him and everything. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much better the situation is going to get for DeAndre Swift next year, but the fact that he has passing down equity really makes it not. it doesn't matter that much. It doesn't really matter as much. I mentioned the Amon-Ra St. Brown thing from earlier. He did play a season high 10 snaps outside last week with Quintez Cephas injured, and Tyrell Williams is coming back at some point. So however much better this damn Lions receiver core can get, it is going to be trending slightly in the right direction. One note here about two quarterbacks. Sounds like Tua and Daniel Jones are both trying to play this week. We'll talk about the Giants in a little bit when we talk about Kadarius Toney. But Tua, I think he is going to play. Does this change your opinion on the Dolphins offense at all? I mean, Jacoby Brissett was like, he is like the most check down prone quarterback in the NFL, even if we don't discuss him in that way. Like, he does not push the ball downfield. Tua, of course, does not push the ball downfield. And they don't really have anybody worth pushing the ball downfield to, except maybe Jaylen Waddle, but they're kind of using him as just a slot guy.
How do Waddle and Gesicki both fail to take advantage of that situation? I guess the answer was Gaskin, as far because he caught all the targets. You're right, he can't run the ball, but it all funneled to Gaskin. So yeah, Tua will definitely be an upgrade, especially with Brissett back, you know, playing with a bum hamstring. I mean, he was carted at one point, so
yeah,
that's impressive actually to even played. But Tua, yes, I'm rooting for him to be back and healthy, but I'm still not overly excited with this offense. If Parker rejoins too, who knows? I'm more concerned as if Daniel Jones gets cleared, because that Rams would then, you know, they're a possible survivor pick. So I'm really curious what happens there. And guys, we're going to talk about Toney. Like, those are, I'm more excited about the Kadarius Toneys than I am any of the Miami receivers.
Yeah, I agree. I would use the Rams in survivor, but I did that in week one. I knew they were going to crush Andy Dalton, so I just got that one out of the way.
You'd use them if Dimes gets cleared, though?
No, I wouldn't use him if he does get cleared, because, I mean, he's Daniel. Again, we're going to talk about Giants like in depth, but he's played better than we probably expected so far this year. Tua, though, I mean, man, this Dolphins thing is just going south, like, I mean, South Beach, south. Yeah. Ha ha ha. But I mean, it's not going well for Miami. Like, let's not forget, too, that they're probably going to end up giving the Eagles a top five pick. Because they sent that pick to trade up for Jaylen Waddle, who they aren't even really using optimally. And they don't, I mean, their offensive line, that was like their number one thing. Like, we're remaking this offensive line, and they're already shuffling guys around up there. It's bad, man. It's really a bad time to be investing in any of your Dolphins. I really think they're going to be potentially looking at the wilderness this year, which is not good considering the timeline that they ended up putting themselves on.
And every time I settle on Flores, one of the best coaches, then it happens all the time. Then you watch the in-game management. I know they have to be separated when you're evaluating these coaches, but he's punting to the goat on fourth and short multiple times. It's like, what are you doing? Like, I don't understand. You're 10-point underdog. That's Brady's offense on the other side.
A guy you spent years being around, you know? Like, yeah, you spent years around Tom Brady. What are you doing? Damning point for Flores is that he can't settle on anything. Like, he can't settle on we don't even know who's calling the plays for this team, because they have that co-offensive coordinator BS thing. We've spent enough time on the Dolphins. Who cares? They're not really a relevant team. Moving on, last thing of note here, Chandler Jones is on the COVID list. He's not expected to play. I would say that this is good news for the Browns offense, their week six opponent. But Dalton, I have a interesting stat about Baker Mayfield that I think you will never guess this, but Dalton, Baker Mayfield leads the NFL in yards per attempt on screen passes. Would you like to guess what his yards per attempt on screen passes are?
Well, it's got to be super high, so I'll just say 10.
It's 13.2.
On screen, yeah, that's insane. Yeah, wow. They're doing it all underneath. Wow,
screen passes. Yeah, on screen passes.
That's wild.
Number two in the NFL, by the way, is Dak Prescott at 8.8. Obviously, that's a huge gap.
Good. It makes my 10 guess feel better too. My 10 guess, yeah. Wow, yeah, to blew that away. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Continue.
No. Go with where you're. It's weird. What?
They scored 89 points last week, the Chargers game, and the Browns game combined, and Beckham saw three targets. I mean, what is going on? What is happening here? I mean, I know you could be say the separated shoulder is affecting his deep throws. That's your only hope if you're a Browns fan right now, because Mayfield, it's ugly. Beckham is Josh Hermsmeyer's buy low air yards guy this week, and I could see it, you know, in a track meet maybe against Arizona. But Arizona is also real, real quietly a run funnel defense, and I just expect more of the same, more Nick Chubb, more Kareem Hunt, and you're really taking a leap of faith at this point if you're relying on Beckham. I mean, it's just, hopefully it's just been, you know, time off, and they'll both get healthier. And obviously I'm not dropping him in fantasy leagues, but man, yeah. I mean, it's tough to throw him in a DFS lineup now and just point to the air yards.
Yeah, exactly. You really, that's all you would be doing is like, well, the air yards are there, and I get it. That might actually work out. The thing with, God, it's just like his first return was so optimistic. Like him and Baker were on the same page. The weighted opportunity was all there. Targets, air yards, everything was there for Beckham. And then obviously against the Vikings, Baker just can't hit the guy when he's wide open for like the game sealing play. That was obviously a nightmare. And then, you know, last week we kind of expected the Browns basically did exactly what we would expect them to do, which is they ran the hell out of the ball. And like they got David Njoku screen passes, you know, like stuff like that, which was basically, that's how you want to beat the Chargers defense. You're not trying to take the top off with Odell Beckham or anything like that. And can Baker Mayfield even take the top off of defense? Doesn't seem like it from this point. The schedule is not great. Like going forward, like they've got the Cardinals this week. You mentioned they're definitely more of a team that you want to run the ball on. They got the Broncos, Steelers, Bengals have been okay defensively. Patriots are kind of okay defensively. And then finally it lightens up in November with the Lions. Man, I feel like this is so obvious to see that. Let me run this take by you. I feel like Baker Mayfield is just basically, we just talked about Jared Goff. I feel like Baker Mayfield is Jared Goff. Like Jared Goff is fine. I think Baker Mayfield is fine. Like he's not actively hurting the team, but is he actively, because the situation's so good. Like, who couldn't thrive in this Browns offense, you know, when they have two of the best running backs in the NFL? He's schemed open, wide open windows, all this stuff. Everything we always used to say about Jared Goff. Now Baker Mayfield is just basically that guy, and now we just have to wonder, will the Browns have, like, everybody's giving the Rams credit for, oh, they go make this aggressive trade for Matthew Stafford right now because it's working out. But they spent the last 2 years before that giving Jared Goff the money and toiling around with Jared Goff. I really wonder what the Browns will do with this decision with Mayfield here.
Yeah, Mayfield was looking like a bust before Stefanski took over. And you mentioned it, the great situation, maybe the best offensive line in football, just the running game. And man, you look at the YPA stat I always point to. But if he's benefiting from that much from the screen pass, then yeah, that's more of a situational thing there. And it just, like I said, the hope is, the left shoulder is what's affecting his deep throws lately. I mean, he has a cannon. He actually does throw the ball far if needed. But the accuracy has just been a disaster. And right now, you can't argue with the comp being a Goff. What do you do when that, you know, the second contract comes up?
Yeah, I think Baker Mayfield's probably a little bit better creating out of structure than Jared Goff is. But I mean, the structure really does benefit Mayfield so much. It's hard to separate the two. And, you know, he was really good in kind of those like improvisational moments as a rookie, more of like the off script stuff. Awful in year two. And then, yeah, I mean, with Stefanski, it's been about a full year's worth from the time that things started to click later last year till now, worth of good production in this offense. But yeah, I mean, it's just tough to, like, this team is ready, it's loaded. And I just don't know that I've always said I will believe that a team will willingly walk into the quarterback wilderness out of quarterback purgatory when I see it. The Rams did not, like, the Rams literally did not do that. They went with Jared Goff, and then when they had an opportunity to go from the quarterback wilderness to the quarterback, like, I don't know, whatever you want to call this, the oasis-ish with Matthew Stafford here, then they make that move. So I don't know if the Browns have the stones to do it, because I don't know if any team has the stones to do it, like, especially the Browns, who have they should be, you know, based on their history, like, they would have loved to have Baker Mayfield like 10 years ago, you know what I mean?
Totally. Your props to you, though, because you really did call the Jared Goff thing at the time, and you knew the franchise was not going to do it, and they re-signed him and regretted it immediately. And Goff was a great example of a guy whose YPA is boosted from his situation. I mean, that was just totally a product of the McVay offense. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But, yeah, the Browns are not going to – yeah, almost certainly they're going to look into bringing Mayfield back. But, yeah, he might be the weakness of an otherwise Super Bowl contending team right now. But hopefully it's just that left shoulder that gets better and he continues to make improvements. Yeah. But right now it's been very frustrating, no question.
And it will just, it's just one more reason for me to like be here in 2028, like still thinking, well, maybe Odell Beckham just needs one more change of situation. Like, you know what I mean? So as long as I can keep doing that to myself, I guess I'll just continue to live in this misery. All right, let's move on though. A couple other stats, like that was kind of just a little fun intro stat that I heard on the Athletic pod that I thought was just like unbelievable.
It's crazy.
I wanted to bring this one up because obviously this is going to be a relevant topic going into the Sunday night game this week and then going forward. What's going on with the Seahawks without Russell Wilson? I mean, it has been forever since we've seen a Seahawks game started by somebody who's not Russell Wilson. This is his first. This is going to be his first missed start. The Seahawks are 17th in neutral pass rate. They're 16th in neutral pace. What are we doing with the Seahawks wide receivers? Because we know that they have lived, both of them, Lockett and Metcalf, have lived on efficiency, not volume, to be like wide receiver one and wide receiver two, as they have been the last 2 years. What are you doing with these guys with Geno here?
I'd say I bumped them each down about five or six spots, but I'm still starting both. Geno Smith looked competent enough last week in relief, and even the previous times he's seen the field too. And Chris Carson's banged up. There's no way they're going to be able to run the ball against the Steelers, and that's the strength of their team. Even Gerald Everett's missed last couple games, so I feel like it'll be screens or whatever. They'll get the ball into Metcalf and Lockett's hands. I mean, it may turn into a total disaster because I do understand that Russell Wilson is by far the most important player on that team, and that may just totally go winless. But I don't know. This Pittsburgh team, it wouldn't shock me if this becomes a competitive game and Metcalf and Lockett are still wide receiver twos. What do you think, Matt?
I think that, basically you kind of have to view DK, whereas I view DK as a high-end one and Lockett as a high-end two, I basically view them as a low-end one and a low-end two.
Perfect.
I will say, though, like these big games, you know, these monster games that DK would have and these like absurd slate-breaking games that Tyler Lockett would have, those are off the board. Like, I don't think that's happening with Geno back there. Geno Smith has thrown fewer than 80 passes in the regular season since 2016. His lone start was that infamous Eli Manning streak-breaking start against the Raiders. Oh, God, that feels like 100 years ago. There's like a Giants nation was outraged that they would do this to Eli Manning in favor of Geno Smith. What a pretty tough history with the New York area, old Geno Smith. But I will say, like, those big games are off the board with Geno back there. But, you know, we know that Russell Wilson is... I've said this on the podcast for the last like 2 years, basically. He does not want to matriculate the offense down the field. And I think that like we can definitely put some of that on the coordinators that he's had. Obviously, Pete Carroll's got like an old school philosophy, but Russ has been in the league forever. Like Russ is not, he is who he is, right? And he's a great quarterback. And obviously, I'm not going to pitch this as some sort of upgrade, but with that style of offense, it's very hit or miss. And I think that's why Lockett has been extremely hit or miss in fantasy. I think DK has been a little hit or miss, but not quite as extreme as Lockett has been. I wonder, like, could we see more? We're not going to, like I said, none of these moonshot games, but could we see more, you know, 8 for 90 from DK or especially Lockett, who is a great full field route runner, like more of these like consistent layup targets, get the ball out of Geno's hands quickly? Because Russ is more like, I'm shooting for, you know, it's like run run deep pass. Like I think that's possible.
100% agree. Yeah, there's less upside, but almost like their floor is in a weird way better, even like especially Lockett, because yeah, there's going to be more underneath stuff, and those are the two best players. I think they're going to be featured more, certainly not of the upside, but I'm with you. Their floor is risen because of this. But on the flip side, I'll say Russell Wilson may end up only missing three games. The latest news was encouraging. He's a fast healer. He's never missed a snap basically before this. And then they have a bye too. So it's possible you get out of this with only missing three games from Russell Wilson as opposed to the eight. Obviously, we'll see. But I'm still starting Metcalf and Lockett this weekend.
Yeah, I think what Pete Carroll said is he's one of the best healers of all time or something like that, which is, I don't know what the hell that means, Pete. Yeah, Russell Wilson, this is, it's like the same reason that people are all freaking out about Stephon Diggs about, you know, after Sunday Night Football, because Josh Allen had, they see the total yards for Josh Allen and, you know, Stephon Diggs has just a few. This like, well, Josh Allen averaged 21 yards per completion. Like when your quarterback is making those deep shots all the time, and Russell Wilson, by the way, is number three this year in yards per completion. He's always really high in that stat. I don't think Geno's going to be that high in that stat. So again, I think if you just really love those floor days, which people just really always talk about how Lockett doesn't have that floor, maybe this is finally the moment. I can like backwards into to talking about why this inconsistency thing is actually all Russ's fault. But that's like my I'm not going to really go too deep on that theory. Kadarius Toney, I thought this was really interesting. Obviously, he has this huge game last week against the Dallas Cowboys. What a journey for Kadarius Toney. He's like he's the last man standing. He then gets thrown out by his head coach. Like, let's not mince words here. Joe Judge was going to throw him out of that game before the refs were going to throw him out of that game when he threw that punch. But, you know, there's a lot of talk right now because Darius Slayton is practicing again. Sterling Shepard is practicing again. I bet both of those guys play this weekend. Kadarius Toney took 64% of his snaps outside in week 5. That says to me that, especially, we don't really know Kenny Galladay's status right now. I'm not really worried about Kadarius Toney eating into Sterling Shepard, because I think Sterling Shepard is still going to have his role as a slot receiver. And I think Sterling Shepard's still like a fringe top 35 receiver the rest of the season. And Toney, to me, I'm sure you're gassed up about Toney. I think he's going to be replacing Darius Slayton more so than he's going to replace him. Sterling Shepard.
Toney looks so good. There's a lot of moving parts here, but if Daniel Jones is cleared and Galladay's out, I'm still firing up Toney, assuming he's good to go with his ankle injury. Man, he's impressed. And no Barkley, obviously, will free up some targets too. Yeah, hopefully Shepard returns and healthy. I could see him being, yeah, top 35-ish guy, especially in PPR. But wow, Toney looks like they might have hit a home run here. He's like this raw route runner, but just clearly The guy can play the yards after the catch. He looks like the real deal. And yeah, I mean, you're excited if you have him in Dynasty and right away, even in redraft. Like I said, if the things go right as far as injuries, because obviously there's a lot of possible mouths to feed and you don't want Mike Glennon being the QB, but with Barkley sidelined, Galladay sidelined, and way Tony's looking, it's pretty exciting.
Listen, I had a lot of questions about Kadarius Toney and his profile coming in, but people were letting him slip to like the second round of rookie drafts because they just hated him so much and like they didn't like the landing spot. And you know, we're here, like, obviously, maybe if all these guys don't get hurt, we might not be having this conversation already, but it's the same conversation that we should have had with, and we're going to talk about Marquise Brown later, but situations change really quickly when we look at these guys from like a dynasty perspective. So sometimes it's like they took this guy in the first round, like they're going to figure out something for him. And I actually kind of think that, listen, I still maintain that he needs to grow to be a full-time starting outside receiver, but I mean, my God, he's got juice. And like, that was the same thing coming in. Like, if he was a total dud of a prospect, I would have understood people all out fading him, but he had clear-cut strengths, like rare ability in the open field, even as a collegiate player. Like, look at any tackle breaking metric, like it was pretty much there for old Kadarius Toney. So
I think hurt him is the Urban Meyer stink, him saying, oh, I wanted to draft him had the Giants not. Yeah. Maybe that weirdly hurt him in all of our minds. Probably did me. I probably bumped him down after I heard that, but he jumps off the page.
To be fair, there was a lot of questions with Toney. Like the route running questions were legit. Like, I don't know what the hell he was doing out there, but he was also still learning the position. He was very kind of like late move to wide receiver. So It's not, I don't know if we really need to relitigate this whole thing, but like, yeah, there were definitely questions about that. The Urban Meyer thing, like, I still can't believe Urban Meyer said that. Still blows my mind. Of all the Urban Meyer things, it's like, that is one of the biggest, like, I can't believe he did that. Number three, also, like, the Giants taking him too was weird, because the Giants wanted to take Devontae Smith, and then they ended up just taking another guy who's, like, had WR next to his name. But, like, there could not be two more different players than Devontae Smith and Kadarius Toney. So that was weird. And, yeah, he goes to a crowded depth chart, and he goes to a team with damn Jason Garrett as offensive coordinator. And, like, Jason Garrett, if he I still don't believe that he would have figured this out if not forced to figure it out. And also, Kadarius Toney had like an awful offseason. Like, I know he's in trouble with the coach because he just punched that guy last week, but he had a terrible offseason with all kinds of BS. So this is no doubt a surprise. Like, nobody saw this coming this early. Actually, as we're talking right now, I just got an alert from Adam Schefter that Daniel Jones is, quote, on track with everything Joe Judge said, and the starting quarterback could return when the Giants host the Rams on Sunday. So it sounds like we'll get dimes there, which is probably good news to make this game watchable.
Yeah, definitely. A crowd is an understatement. I mean, Darius Slayton's good. I mean, John Ross is good. I mean, that they're really loaded there. No, not John. Okay, wouldn't go that far.
No. John Ross obviously has juice. I just think Darius Slayton's kind of a jag.
Tony's better. No question. You're right. No, now it's separated. Yeah. No question. I'm just saying the depth there is, it's not nothing, but the Galladays could be banged up the rest of the year very easily. Yeah, and I hear you as far as Slayton. And Barkley, you know, he was the guy projected for 100-plus targets, and now he's sidelined too. So, good to hear about Daniel Jones. Because boy, I jinxed him. He was my one. We do a one bold prediction of the week, and I had him ranked to do well last week. And that, sorry there. What a disastrous Giants injury game. It felt like my 49ers from last season.
I mean, it's not been a very smooth season for them so far overall. It's a very, they're a strange team, man. They're just a weird team. But I think that the talent has shown through, and I think Jones. Obviously absent of last week, he wasn't really playing well before he got hurt anyways. No. But you know, I think he has on balance played like an average starting quarterback, which I didn't even know if he could do that coming into this year. So yeah, let's talk about Marquise Brown. Like rest of season rankings, Marquise Brown has 42% of his targets from the slot this year. He's top 15, I think, in weighted opportunity. He's wide receiver 6 overall in fantasy football. And Rashad Bateman is expected back this week. But with the way the Ravens, this is what I was talking about with the Kadarius Toney thing. We all said coming into this year, like when Rashad Bateman was drafted, it's like, oh, you got to push Bateman. I know we're talking about Marquise Brown, but like, we got to push Bateman down in dynasty rankings, no matter how much you like him as a prospect, because the Ravens just don't throw the ball that much. And the Ravens are throwing the ball like around middle of the pack in terms of neutral situation passing rate. And obviously people will immediately come back and say, well, they weren't going to be this way if all of their running backs didn't get hurt, or they didn't have this and this happen to them. Well, that's fair, but that's the NFL. Like, things change all the time. Situations change all the time in the NFL. I think the situation has changed enough that, like, Marquise Brown, I think, is an every week fantasy starter. And I think I'm pretty optimistic that Rashad Bateman is going to be an instant hit as soon as he hits the field.
Yeah, it's hard not to rank Brown as a top 20 guy each week. I mean, he went on that touchdown run quietly to end last season, too. It's a perfect setup. Baltimore cannot run the football this year with their running backs. Their defense isn't as good as expected. And Lamar Jackson is throwing the ball better than ever. I mean, just awesome out there. And Marquise Brown, imagine if he didn't drop those deep balls against the Lions to his stats. So yeah, he's a must start. And Bateman's probably going to take a while to get acclimated, but he's supposedly, you know, a real, real legit prospect too. And Watkins is banged up. So I'm excited if you have Brown, you're excited if you have Bateman stashed. I mean, Lamar Jackson just is, I mean, he might be the MVP favorite right now, but it's awesome to see. And it's fun to see Marquise Brown, you know, 160 pounds entering the league, said too small last year. He worked hard and then looked like a total bust the first half, but quietly, here we are. I mean, one could argue he should be a top 10 fantasy wide receiver moving forward. The opportunity has been there.
Yeah, I'm pretty pissed. It was hard to be in on Marquise Brown like over the summer because, you know, the Ravens had a weird summer, man. Like, Lamar spent so much time on the COVID list, and then by the time he was back, Hollywood Brown was injured. You know, he didn't practice much of training camp, so it was kind of hard to be super in on Brown. But I'm still pissed I didn't see this one coming, because I really liked Brown coming into last year. He's been 4th and 12th in my success rate versus zone coverage metrics, like, and they've moved him into a role like this is the role he should be playing. Like, don't have him outside facing press coverage, have him running routes over the middle of the field, like being like we saw him on the sky cam on Monday night, like identifying that he was like just crushing zone coverage, even in the red zone. Like, this is what he does. This is what he should be doing as a player. I love this guy, man. I'm so gassed up that he's having this big year. You know, he's a player I talked to before the NFL draft when he came out in Nashville, which feels like 1,000 years ago, by the way. Like, talking to players in person before the draft. What does that look like? And, you know, just going through like the details that he puts into his route running. He's Antonio Brown's cousin. Like, you know, he's been learning from the best of the best in terms of how to run routes forever. I think he's just taking that next step as a player. He's another one that's still super cheap in Dynasty. Like, Dynasty rankings across the board have him so low, and like, I don't really understand. I think the situation has completely changed in Baltimore. One situation that has definitely changed and could have changed if Juju Smith-Schuster had signed with the Ravens, as he was apparently offered to do. Well, Juju is on IR. He's still in Pittsburgh, but is out for the rest of the season. What is your outlook on Chase Claypool the rest of the way? I'm getting pretty excited, but I don't want to get too excited, because, you know, he has 2 huge plays from the slot last week. I wonder if he gets more routes there, obviously, because Juju is their main slot guy. Deontay Johnson, despite the fact that he's kind of smaller and people people peg him as like a potential slot guy because he gets the short ADOT targets, but he's seen just 5% of his targets from the slot this year. The Steelers have the third easiest strength of schedule versus pass defense efficiency the rest of the way. Now, Claypool's limited with a hamstring injury right now. Not really too concerned about that. What's your outlook on Chase Claypool the rest of the season?
Double-digit TDs as a rookie, free up so many targets without Juju. So even with Big Ben looking, you know, almost washed, you got to be excited. Yeah, a top 25-ish type guy rest of the season, Claypool, and that's probably maybe even being conservative. Yeah, it's big news for him, Juju going down. And nice to see Deontay Johnson obviously be healthy and catch a couple bombs in back-to-back weeks. What about Najee Harris? I was just arguing on a different pod that I say he would go fifth at the latest in a PPR league right now in a draft. I mean, if you look at his box score after that bad week one, it's been production after productive just constantly, and they just the volume's there. I mean, and there's and it also it's an indictment on the rest of the running back landscape. I mean, Barkley going down, and it's like, yeah, I mean, you got Eckler there, and I was saying I'd even rather Najee than Aaron Jones. Just, I mean, the volume's been there, man, in full PPR. In full PPR, the volume's there. And A.J. Dillon is becoming a thing there, so that was my argument. Where would you stand there? You think I'm crazy to say that?
No, I mean, I'm thinking about it because I don't think you'd take any wide receivers ahead of him. Maybe Davante Adams, but...
No, Adams probably, yeah. But that's Adams is his own breed. I would take Adams in full PPR, but no one else. No other receiver.
No other receiver. So then it's like, yeah, it's McCaffrey. I guess if you're still going to include McCaffrey because he should be back, maybe there. McCaffrey, Henry, I would probably take Zeke ahead of him.
It's a debate. Yeah.
You're making me want to move him up my rest of season rankings, that's for sure. That's a good point, though.
It's interesting because you don't really think that, but go ahead, look at his box score and just look at the projected volume. And man, it's just there for the rookie. And he's made some nice plays too. But that's a definite even more targets without Juju. There you go. Even more for him.
He leads all running backs in targets. And obviously that 19 target game with Deontay Johnson out is buoying that. But I mean, with Juju out, we can actually project some of that to stay the same. Yeah, I mean, being in the Dalvin Cook business is not fun right now either. So, I mean, yeah, I kind of feel like Najee is about as safe as it gets. And, yeah, I think overall, I hope that he takes some of that Juju volume because I know some of it's going to get pushed to Deontay Johnson. But Deontay Johnson, like, I think is a clear-cut top 20 receiver rest of season at the bare minimum. Like, you know how many passes he's dropped so far this year, Dalton? Do you know?
No, I don't.
0.0. So take that, drop nerds. Deontay rocks. Chase Claypool rocks. Like, Ben is what he is. But man, I mean, even if you're building lineups, and I already started taking a look at it for like single game daily fantasy Sunday Night Football, it's like it gets pretty ugly pretty quick. And I think that's kind of the way the Steelers will be the rest of the year. Like, it's basically just going to be those three guys. And like, I don't really care about James Washington. I don't really care about Ray McCloud or the tight end or anything. Just those guys, I think, the rest of the way.
No, it'll be concentrated. I have Deontay, my 11th receiver, and Claypool, my 18th this week, and I might be pretty much like that moving forward. So, yeah, I like both those guys quite a bit.
This one I thought was interesting. I don't really know what this means, Dalton, but Justin Fields right now has the lowest expected completion percentage in the league per Next Gen Stats at 59%. I found it interesting that Andy Dalton has the highest expected completion percentage at 73%.
Really?
Yeah.
That is really interesting. That
literally like the bottom and the top there. And obviously the biggest difference between the two is the air yards. Justin Fields has been slinging that thing downfield. Andy Dalton was doing, let's just say, the opposite of that when he was starting. It almost makes me, in a way, optimistic about Fields because per Next Gen Stats, has been given the hardest assignment so far in terms of his expected completion percentage. Some of those are obviously his choices to throw the ball downfield. That is probably not going to change. That's in his nature. But I'm really trying to talk myself into how this Bears passing offense can get better because I just believe in Allen Robinson. I believe in Darnell Mooney, and I believe in Justin Fields way too much to just like completely have given up hope. And I feel like the fantasy industry at large has kind of given up hope. I think in a way, if like they can bring that expected completion percentage up, I think Bill Lazor's done a pretty good job calling plays so far. That makes me a little more optimistic to say for like maybe not the rest of the month, but maybe like November, December, Justin Fields and these pass catchers could look a little bit better.
And last week, they weirdly played with the lead the whole second half. That's, you know, that's when Herbert got all his touches. That's probably not going to happen most weeks. But it's weird that Mooney has quite clearly been Fields' guys. But you look at the completion percentage above expectation. It's three rookies at the bottom. It's Wilson, Fields, my guy Lance after one game. And then Trevor Lawrence is right there, bottom five, too. So it's just been the rookie QBs this year, just from top to bottom, have struggled, although Davis Mills had a good game last week. But I mean, I don't know. Fields, he's not even running. I don't know. It's weird, but I think these rookies will all improve and get better with more experience. But it has been a little eye-opening just how bad they've all looked, I mean, so far. I mean, it has not been great. But, I mean, still, you're going with Fields, and I'm glad that they're moving on from Dalton and better days ahead. But I am personally – I'm not starting Allen Robinson. I rank him outside of I think around like wide receiver 40. I mean, you still treat him as a wide receiver 3 or no?
I mean, you can hear it. Like, hurts me to say this, but I think he's like a very low end boom bust wide receiver 3. I don't really know how you can say it otherwise right now. It just is what it is. The volume is not there, and I'm kicking myself for not being more. I was like basically just like projecting the best possible outcome for these guys. And like, it was so clear from the beginning that Matt Nagy was not going to facilitate the best possible outcome here. I don't know why I couldn't see that coming. Optimism. It's a curse in fantasy. That's for sure. On that note, though, my last stat here before we jump into the Thursday night preview, AJ Brown is the lone player with 6+ deep targets. That's 20+ yards down the field to go without a catch. Is AJ Brown a buy low? Is AJ Brown a positive regression candidate? He has a matchup, obviously a tough matchup with the Bills this week. The Bills are the best defense in the NFL. They just gave it to the Chiefs on Sunday night. But basically everything in AJ Brown's outlook says he should positively, move forward here. Julio Jones is back at practice, but I mean, God, I don't really know how much Julio's moving the needle at right now at this point. And I think, look, last time that these two teams faced off, the Buffalo Bills and the Tennessee Titans, the Bills did limit Derrick Henry, 19 carries, 3 yards per carry in that game. He scored 2 touchdowns, so he made it for your fantasy team. But they're a better defense now. They're a much better defense, and they're not going to be playing in like the Titans were playing in positive game script that entire game. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think that Brown, even in a tough matchup, could – like, I think there's a chance that if he is a buy-low window, that could shut right after this week.
Yeah, I'm personally worried about his health, and I love AJ Brown, but you're not trading him now. I mean, he hasn't done, he's disappointed in the possible trade partners. We'll see a tough matchup against the Bills, too. So you want to have him, if you are looking to trade him, wait till he has a good game, which he inevitably will with all these downfield targets that he's missing. I don't know. I am concerned long term, though. I would consider trading him after that said big game. I love AJ Brown, the player, though, so much, but I just worry about the health. And then eventually, maybe if Julio Jones comes back. But I'm with you as far as game script. I know it's gone okay for Henry so far, but it's still a bad defense, and they're going to play different opponents, and they're going to have to throw. So a healthy AJ Brown could start cashing in those downfield targets, certainly. But personally, I do worry about his health over the rest of the season. And I don't know if part of those missed downfield things are him being lack of 100%. I don't know. It might be a career-long thing with him, just always battling an injury. What do you think about Brown moving forward?
I think that could be the case. We'll see. Schedule-wise, they get the Chiefs after this week. That could be the big blow-up game, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be the big blow-up game. But it's worth noting, too, that they get the Titans still get the Texans 2 more times. They get the Jaguars 1 more time. The schedule is not the last game of the season for the second matchup with the Texans is the last week of the season, week 18 or whatever the hell it is. So that might not be that relevant for your fantasy team. But it's just worth mentioning that there are some good games ahead for Brown. So if you do want to hold on through those good games, you can do that. Otherwise, you could look to potentially sell after. I don't know. I'm pretty optimistic about him on Sunday night. I'm pretty optimistic, but only because of the volume has been there from like an overall team perspective. He's also 27% of the targets last week without Julio Jones there. But all right, let's talk about one good team and one not so good team on Thursday Night Football. Buccaneers at Eagles. Gronk is out. Brady's going to play. Duh, he's got a thumb injury. Who cares? Antoine Winfield and Lavonte David are out for the Bucs. There's two pretty crucial defenders. Their defense has, like, we talked about this all last year, that they were the healthiest team in the NFL, and like, that's why they were so good last year to end the season. Well, they've not been the healthiest team in the NFL so far this season, especially on defense. Dallas Goedert for the Eagles, also worth noting, is on the COVID list. How do you feel about this game overall from a daily fantasy perspective?
First of all, I don't know. I'll kind of counter you, and I think this game could be competitive. I could see the Eagles even winning this outright. They've allowed the third fewest yards per play against. Their defense is okay. I like that they pass the ball so much. Jalen Hurts, everyone says he's such a better real life or a fantasy player than real life players, completing 65% of his passes, 7.5 YPA, a better completion percentage above expectation than Brady, Mahomes, Stafford. He's had 6 touchdowns nullified by penalty. I think Jalen Hurts is good. I think Jalen Hurts is pretty good football player. I understand he makes some mistakes that seemingly just get glared on. I don't know. I think he's both good and he's obviously better in fantasy because of the rushing, but I also think he's all right in real life and only getting better. And I think they're going to be competitive in this game. But of course, Brady is having one of his best seasons of his career at 44. The thumb injury, he says it's not a problem, but I mean, it was wrapped. Who knows? Short week. I don't know. I guess this game is going to be close, but of course it'll turn into a Bucks blowout probably now me saying that. But that's my counter to you. I think an upset is live in this one, actually.
Okay. Yeah. I'm surprised to hear you say that. The Bucks are 7-point road favorites right now over the Eagles. And God, I mean, I just have a tough time betting against the Bucks at this point. They're so good. I don't know. I think the Eagles defense, like, this is a team that should be 1-4, the Eagles. Like, Sam Darnold gifted them that game last week, you know? I mean, good Lord, Sam Darnold. Come on, give me a break, man. They couldn't protect him. The Eagles' pass rush is still pretty good. Their defensive line is pretty good. But from, like, a run defense perspective, like, they play so much zone coverage. Tom Brady just shreds zone coverage, too.
That's
like,
true, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing that I could see is the Eagles actually keeping a little bit of pace here. Like, I don't think they've got a prayer of stopping Brady, period. But I think from just an overall, like, offensive perspective, you're right. The Eagles right now, I think, are 7th in neutral situation passing rate, which is so crazy because they have a rushing quarterback. Like, they're not using – they're basically just dropping Jalen Hurts into, like, Nick Sirianni's Colts offense, you know? It's weird. It's weird. I don't know. That gives me weird vibes about the coach. Gives me weird vibes on how they might feel about Jalen Hurts. I think Jalen Hurts has played pretty well this year. Obviously, he's had some bad moments, and he's crushed some good matchups with the Chiefs, the Falcons. Like, he's played well in good matchups. But, I mean, he's shown you enough signs. The Eagles have all these first-round picks. Like, it would be great if they just settled on Jalen Hurts, and then they just, like, I don't know, built around him or whatever. But that's a separate conversation. Some of the players worth highlighting in this game – Leonard Fournette, dude, how do we feel about old playoff Lenny, week six Lenny, whatever he wants to go by these days? He obviously played on like 80% of the snaps against the Patriots. He's been kind of the guy, and I think he's been kind of looking good so far. And the Eagles are the 23rd ranked run defense in DVOA.
You can use him in your yearly fantasy leagues as an RB2 moving forward, and he would be a top 15 guy if Gio Bernard went down, you know, if he got all the passing down work. He stole that one short TD catch last week. But yeah, no, Fournette has definitely overtaken my guy Ronald Jones like he did in the playoff stretch. He's clearly the most trusted back. He gets the dump offs for sure. Uncle Lenny is emerged there. And then other on the counter, Tampa Bay, no one will run against them at all. So Zach Ertz at $14 in the Yahoo DFS, with Goddard possibly missing this game on the COVID list. And then Kenneth Gainwell, another 14. He might just be this week's Miles Gaskin, get all the catches. As we know, Miles Sanders struggles with the dump off. So Gainwell maybe be an option there. But we got Quez Watkins possibly outplaying, overtaking Jalen Reagor as the wide receiver too. In Philly, and then of course Devonta Smith is the guy you're looking for if you want to start a pass catcher or the receiver for the Eagles.
Yeah, Devonta Smith definitely is like in play. You know, he's got like top 15 outlook for, you know, in terms of targets, air yards. It's worth noting Leonard Fournette did run 28 routes last week, and Gio Bernard ran just 8. Obviously, most of that is in positive game script. Right. We would expect him to be, and he's had 5 targets in back to back games. So like, yeah, I think Leonard Fournette is like I have him at RB15 right now this week. I think he is clearly in play from like a strategy perspective in daily fantasy. It's like you kind of want to try to pick one or two. You want to pick two of these Bucks receivers, but in a way it might actually make sense to just like have Brady and Fournette and like try to access all of the Bucks touchdowns and then just try to run it back with a couple Eagles. Zach Ertz, I agree with you there. Quez Watkins is interesting, man, because Jalen Reagor can't. I mean, I don't know what to tell you about old Jalen Reagor. Like, that is what it is. But Quez Watkins is fast. He ran 29. He played 29 snaps in the slot last week. So he would be like a potential The problem is he's 14 bucks. So is Zach Ertz. Like, I wish he was like the, if Quez Watkins was the stone minimum at 10, I would definitely say play him. He's going to be very popular along with Zach Ertz, and just I feel like Ertz could fall like ass backwards into 13 targets in this week, and I like this game. I wouldn't be surprised.
I undersold Fournette. I have him 16th this week, and maybe you just look at the jabronis, the other running backs in his area. It gets really thin fast.
Yes.
He could definitely be a top 15 back the rest of the season, which is not great for those who drafted Ronald Jones. But
sorry, man.
Antonio Brown's cheap. I know you really did. the cheapest of the three receivers, but you know, maybe not be his turn after last week's big game. But man, he's gonna pay off big time at his ADP. Antonio Brown. You have any thoughts on the Godwin Evans AB trio? What you do with that?
I mean, the real answer is you play all of them, right? You know, you play every single one of them every single week, because it's like, how can you afford to miss out on the goodness, right? Like, if you didn't start Antonio Brown last week, you absolutely hate yourself, right? And like, Godwin still gave you what, like 7 for 70 last week, right? That was kind of his stat line.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he hasn't been killing you or anything. When you look at like where these guys line up, obviously it's like they've got Darius Slay as one side of the court. Darius Slay, it's interesting. Like, he tracked DJ Moore around the field last week, which I wasn't expecting, because like I said, the Eagles just kind of run, they play zone coverage and they just roll with it. But that was pretty different. I know he was chirping about that too coming into the game, that he's like, oh, you don't know what is man and what is zone coverage. And then obviously he gets the man up with DJ Moore all game or whatever. I don't know that he's going to be able to he's doing that in this game. Steven Nelson's their other perimeter corner, and then Avante Maddox, the slot guy, is probably the weakest of the three. Like, I think this could be a pretty good spot for Godwin. I'm going to probably rank him inside my top 10 receivers this week.
Yeah, should be a good. Hopefully, it'll be an interesting game. Now I'm convinced Tampa Bay is going to kill them after my coming out strong with Ether. But I like Jalen Hurts, man. I think Jalen Hurts is better in real life than he's been given credit for. But maybe I'm way off. We'll see. Fantasy wise, there's no doubt. I mean, his floor. I heard one stat. Sorry, I don't give it credit, but only one player in all of fantasy has finished top 12 at his position. Spoiler alert. Yeah, it was Hurts. It's Hurts. Yeah. The only player to finish top 12 at his position each week so far this year. So anyway, should be a good game, and hopefully the Eagles cover.
I think he's cleared 20 plus points in every single week too, at least in our daily fantasy game. So yeah, I mean, Hurts has been balling. Last note, man, this is not a prediction. This is not what I think is going to happen, but wouldn't it be like, just that is just something that can only happen in fantasy football. Everybody in the world is out on Miles Sanders, rightfully so, by the way. Everybody in the world is out on Miles Sanders. Nobody can run on the Bucks. Like, if you are just like so cynical about life and fantasy football in general, would you just like not be so surprised if Miles Sanders runs for like 100 yards or busts off like one rando big play?
Yeah, you got to use him in one of the tournament lineups. Yes, you're totally right. That is the way NFL works. It's exactly the opposite of what's supposed to happen. Is totally great call. I bet now. Yeah, totally. That is what's going to happen. Sanders going to go off.
I haven't had the fortitude to tweet it yet, because like, obviously I don't really mean it. Like, I would not start, if I have Miles Sanders in a season long fantasy lineup, you have to, well, I don't know if you have better options, running backs by weeks, it is what it is. You should not play Miles Sanders, but like, that would just be such a fantasy football thing to happen, is like Miles Sanders goes off against the run defense that no one has, because everything says no. Kenny Gainwell is going to catch 10 passes like Miles Gaskin. Miles Sanders isn't even getting any opportunity. They're not running the ball at all. Nobody runs on the Bucks. You can't run on the Bucks. Boom, he gets like a 77-yard touchdown to start the game. I don't know, man. I'm just like mentally preparing myself for that so that I don't have to feel irritated when it happens.
I like it. It's a contrarian play. Just, yeah, they'll counter the defense. It's certain to happen now.
I'm not saying to do it. I'm just saying don't be surprised when it happens, because it's so stupid. So that's just kind of where I'm at.
Totally. No, the NFL is stupid. No question about it. Yeah.
The NFL is stupid.
There's no rhyme or reason.
The NFL is stupid. The NFL is stupid, but we're thankful for it, because it does keep the lights on. So there is that. All right. That is going to do it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
No, I love it. Yes. All right. All its stupidity. Good times, Armin. Good times.
Appreciate you, buddy. It's always good talking to you about this stupid little game that we all love so much. Where would we be without fantasy football? I don't know, and I don't want to think about it. In the meantime, that's going to do it for us, but we'll keep the conversation going on Twitter. You can follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB, where you can go block me after I tweet that Miles Sanders thing. And you can follow Dalton at Dalton Del Don. If you want fantasy analysis and news and updates from the entire team, give a follow to at Yahoo Fantasy. Also, while you're waiting for that Miles Sanders tweet, it might already be out by the time, depending on how bold I'm feeling for the rest of the day, it might already be out. But while you're waiting to go check it out, make sure you listen to some of our podcasts here, because we've got you covered with a preview of the college football weekend. Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our friend Pat 40 from SI break down the big storylines and big games on the latest episode of College Football Inquirer, while Nick Bromberg provides a betting guide for Saturday's action on Yahoo Sportsbook Daily. Look for them both on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Dalton will be back tomorrow with the preview of Sunday's NFL games with Liz Loza, but until then, we are out. We'll